Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November Examination Series, 2016. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready. Here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What time did the plane depart from Tokyo? B. What is the customer's main complaint?
Good morning, sir. How can I help you?
Well, I was travelling on the delayed 6 o'clock flight from Tokyo yesterday. We had to wait for 3 hours and didn't leave until 9:40 last night.
I'm sorry to hear that, sir. We usually offer food vouchers to customers who have their flight cancelled or delayed for more than 2 hours. Did you receive them?
Yes, and I appreciated them. But because of this delay, I missed my connecting flight, which I sort of expected. But it was the limited information that I'm really not happy about.
I can only apologise on behalf of the airline. Good morning, sir. How can I help you?
Well, I was travelling on the delayed 6 o'clock flight from Tokyo yesterday. We had to wait for 3 hours and didn't leave until 9:40 last night.
I'm sorry to hear that, sir. We usually offer food vouchers to customers who have their flight cancelled or delayed for more than 2 hours. Did you receive them?
Yes, and I appreciated them. But because of this delay, I missed my connecting flight, which I sort of expected. But it was the limited information that I'm really not happy about.
I can only apologise on behalf of the airline.
Question 2. A. Why couldn't the girl's sister come to the birthday party? B. Where did the friends agree to get together next?
It was a great birthday party last night, Tiago. I really enjoyed myself.
Thanks. Pity your sister couldn't make it. Did she have to work late again?
Actually, she was ill, but she's feeling much better now.
Good. Listen, are you both still free to go to the Italian restaurant tomorrow night?
Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention. I'm going to the cinema. How about Friday instead?
Great. Shall I see you both there at 7 p.m?
Sounds good to me. It was a great birthday party last night, Tiago. I really enjoyed myself.
Thanks. Pity your sister couldn't make it. Did she have to work late again?
Actually, she was ill, but she's feeling much better now.
Good. Listen, are you both still free to go to the Italian restaurant tomorrow night?
Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention. I'm going to the cinema. How about Friday instead?
Great. Shall I see you both there at 7 p.m?
Sounds good to me.
Question 3. A. When exactly will the volunteers meet to pick up litter? B. What should the volunteers take with them?
Listen, everyone. We've recently noticed a worrying increase in the amount of litter around the school. We'd like to organise a group of volunteers to help clean up the school grounds. Anyone who's interested, could you let reception know by Thursday? Then please turn up at 4 p.m. Friday. We considered Saturday morning, but we thought that some of you might be going away for the weekend. Make sure you come with some rubber gloves. The school will provide plastic bags and we'll give you all refreshments afterwards as a thank you. If you have any questions, come and see me. Listen, everyone. We've recently noticed a worrying increase in the amount of litter around the school. We'd like to organise a group of volunteers to help clean up the school grounds. Anyone who's interested, could you let reception know by Thursday? Then please turn up at 4 p.m. Friday. We considered Saturday morning, but we thought that some of you might be going away for the weekend. Make sure you come with some rubber gloves. The school will provide plastic bags and we'll give you all refreshments afterwards as a thank you. If you have any questions, come and see me.
Question 4. A. What is wrong with the man's parcel? B. How much will the man have to pay in total?
Next, please.
Hello. I'd like to post this parcel to Brazil.
Can you put it on the scales, please? OK. I'm afraid you won't be able to use our standard postal service to send this.
Really? Is it too large?
Too heavy, actually. You'll have to post it with a courier instead.
I see. What if I split the contents into two parcels? Would that work?
Certainly, sir. In that case, let me check again. Yes, each parcel would be £8.40, so that'd come to £16.80 altogether.
Right. I'll do that then and come back later. Thanks for your help.
No problem. Next, please.
Hello. I'd like to post this parcel to Brazil.
Can you put it on the scales, please? OK. I'm afraid you won't be able to use our standard postal service to send this.
Really? Is it too large?
Too heavy, actually. You'll have to post it with a courier instead.
I see. What if I split the contents into two parcels? Would that work?
Certainly, sir. In that case, let me check again. Yes, each parcel would be £8.40, so that'd come to £16.80 altogether.
Right. I'll do that then and come back later. Thanks for your help.
No problem.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by a scientist about growing plants in space. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences below. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Today we'll be looking at growing plants in space. Scientists have started researching how astronauts could grow their own food while in space without relying on supplies from Earth. Scientists involved in plant-growing experiments in space were mainly concerned about lack of gravity, but they also had to make sure there was enough air circulating around plants to prevent them from dying. To guarantee that the air distribution was effective, fans were positioned near the plants. Another factor that scientists have to take into consideration in space is the higher levels of radiation compared to the atmosphere on Earth. This can cause unwelcome changes during experiments, which have already been observed on board the International Space Station in tomato seeds before they were even planted. Additional experiments are in progress at the South Pole base, where scientists can create similar conditions to those on other planets. The base lies on 3 kilometer-thick ice, but plants grow well here in a special greenhouse. The scientists who work there refer to it as the garden chamber. The knowledge gained from these experiments will be used by astronauts on the Moon or Mars in the future. The scientists staying at the South Pole base are cut off from the rest of the world for about 8 months each year. Despite this, the greenhouse produces enough fresh salad for each of the 50 inhabitants at the base to enjoy every lunchtime. They're also starting to grow strawberries, although they're not something they'll be able to have every day. Plants at the South Pole base are grown in a water solution. Surprisingly, this way of growing plants doesn't take as long as it does in soil. The greenhouse uses 140 litres of water every day. As water is in short supply, there's a limit to how many showers each person is allowed per week. However, for obvious health reasons, there's no restriction on drinking water. Living at the base has some drawbacks, but there are positive aspects too. The inside of the greenhouse is humid, which is the opposite to the external environment at the South Pole. This makes it a very attractive place for those at the base to spend time in. During polar nights, the greenhouse provides bright light for the plants too. The South Pole is not the only place where experiments are being conducted. Some places are chosen because their climate resembles that of other planets. Hawaii, on the other hand, has soil that is comparable to that on certain planets. An experiment carried out at the Space Center in Florida has already brought promising results. This experiment focused on a fresh food production system. It used special mats, also known as pillows, which were soaked in water and nutrients to help plants grow. The results were so good that these mats have now been transferred on board the International Space Station to be tested in real space conditions. For more information about similar projects, you can follow my blog.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Today we'll be looking at growing plants in space. Scientists have started researching how astronauts could grow their own food while in space without relying on supplies from Earth. Scientists involved in plant-growing experiments in space were mainly concerned about lack of gravity, but they also had to make sure there was enough air circulating around plants to prevent them from dying. To guarantee that the air distribution was effective, fans were positioned near the plants. Another factor that scientists have to take into consideration in space is the higher levels of radiation compared to the atmosphere on Earth. This can cause unwelcome changes during experiments, which have already been observed on board the International Space Station in tomato seeds before they were even planted. Additional experiments are in progress at the South Pole base, where scientists can create similar conditions to those on other planets. The base lies on 3 kilometer-thick ice, but plants grow well here in a special greenhouse. The scientists who work there refer to it as the garden chamber. The knowledge gained from these experiments will be used by astronauts on the Moon or Mars in the future. The scientists staying at the South Pole base are cut off from the rest of the world for about 8 months each year. Despite this, the greenhouse produces enough fresh salad for each of the 50 inhabitants at the base to enjoy every lunchtime. They're also starting to grow strawberries, although they're not something they'll be able to have every day. Plants at the South Pole base are grown in a water solution. Surprisingly, this way of growing plants doesn't take as long as it does in soil. The greenhouse uses 140 litres of water every day. As water is in short supply, there's a limit to how many showers each person is allowed per week. However, for obvious health reasons, there's no restriction on drinking water. Living at the base has some drawbacks, but there are positive aspects too. The inside of the greenhouse is humid, which is the opposite to the external environment at the South Pole. This makes it a very attractive place for those at the base to spend time in. During polar nights, the greenhouse provides bright light for the plants too. The South Pole is not the only place where experiments are being conducted. Some places are chosen because their climate resembles that of other planets. Hawaii, on the other hand, has soil that is comparable to that on certain planets. An experiment carried out at the Space Center in Florida has already brought promising results. This experiment focused on a fresh food production system. It used special mats, also known as pillows, which were soaked in water and nutrients to help plants grow. The results were so good that these mats have now been transferred on board the International Space Station to be tested in real space conditions. For more information about similar projects, you can follow my blog.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about courses that they have done. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear each speaker twice. Speaker 1.
Last year, my grandson moved abroad. I decided to learn more about computers so I could keep in touch with him online. Before the course, I could just about manage to get online, but that was it. I was expecting a lot from this course, but after a couple of lessons, I noticed that I wasn't really learning anything. And that wasn't because of the level, it was just that the teacher didn't explain things clearly. I did consider leaving, but in the end I stuck with it, even though it wasn't worth the money.
Speaker 2.
I find languages fascinating. I hate it when I go on holiday and can't understand the local people or things like the menu in a restaurant. I like chatting to people and making new friends. So, what I do is learn some phrases I can use in the country I'm going to. This year, I learnt some Mandarin, or perhaps I should say I tried to. I really enjoyed the course, don't get me wrong. The tutor was very patient with me, but somehow I just couldn't manage to grasp everything.
Speaker 3.
Last year I was working in a museum. Unfortunately, it closed down and I lost my job. I decided to use the time before looking for a new job to learn more about music. so I enrolled on a full-time course. Halfway through, I heard from a childhood friend that a gallery owner was looking for a new manager. It wasn't easy to leave my studies because I was enjoying myself so much, but I couldn't ignore the opportunity. I went for an interview and got the job straight away.
Speaker 4.
Recently, I did a computer design course at our local college, and I think I've found something I'd like to pursue as my career in the future. Fortunately, the college offers a wide range of short-term courses so that people can try out different things, from foreign languages to something like plumbing. Another benefit is that if you find something too difficult, you don't have to stay till the end and can just switch to another course.
Speaker 5.
I'm quite a sociable person, but at work I'm so busy that I don't have a chance to talk to anybody or make new friends. That's why I decided to take an evening course, hoping I'd meet new people. I soon realised that the course, which was in management, would take up lots of time, so there was no opportunity to socialise. On the plus side, I learnt invaluable things for my job and, soon after finishing the course, I got promoted. So I can't really complain.
Speaker 6.
I spend a lot of my free time reading about history and art. So 2 years ago, I decided to take a part-time course on the same subject. I did it just for fun, but this didn't mean that I wasn't a dedicated student. I actually studied very hard and always did my homework. The teacher was a bit disappointed that I had no plans to get involved in the subject professionally. She said I was really good at it.
Now you will hear the 6 speakers again. Speaker 1.
Last year, my grandson moved abroad. I decided to learn more about computers so I could keep in touch with him online. Before the course, I could just about manage to get online, but that was it. I was expecting a lot from this course, but after a couple of lessons, I noticed that I wasn't really learning anything. And that wasn't because of the level, it was just that the teacher didn't explain things clearly. I did consider leaving, but in the end I stuck with it, even though it wasn't worth the money.
Speaker 2.
I find languages fascinating. I hate it when I go on holiday and can't understand the local people or things like the menu in a restaurant. I like chatting to people and making new friends. So, what I do is learn some phrases I can use in the country I'm going to. This year, I learnt some Mandarin, or perhaps I should say I tried to. I really enjoyed the course, don't get me wrong. The tutor was very patient with me, but somehow I just couldn't manage to grasp everything.
Speaker 3.
Last year I was working in a museum. Unfortunately, it closed down and I lost my job. I decided to use the time before looking for a new job to learn more about music. So I enrolled on a full-time course. Halfway through, I heard from a childhood friend that a gallery owner was looking for a new manager. It wasn't easy to leave my studies because I was enjoying myself so much, but I couldn't ignore the opportunity. I went for an interview and got the job straight away.
Speaker 4.
Recently, I did a computer design course at our local college, and I think I've found something I'd like to pursue as my career in the future. Fortunately, the college offers a wide range of short-term courses so that people can try out different things, from foreign languages to something like plumbing. Another benefit is that if you find something too difficult, you don't have to stay till the end and can just switch to another course.
Speaker 5.
I'm quite a sociable person, but at work I'm so busy that I don't have a chance to talk to anybody or make new friends. That's why I decided to take an evening course, hoping I'd meet new people. I soon realised that the course, which was in management, would take up lots of time, so there was no opportunity to socialise. On the plus side, I learnt invaluable things for my job and, soon after finishing the course, I got promoted. So I can't really complain.
Speaker 6.
I spend a lot of my free time reading about history and art. So 2 years ago, I decided to take a part-time course on the same subject. I did it just for fun, but this didn't mean that I wasn't a dedicated student. I actually studied very hard and always did my homework. The teacher was a bit disappointed that I had no plans to get involved in the subject professionally. She said I was really good at it.
That is the end of the short talks about courses. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear a radio presenter talking to a woman called Maria about beekeeping. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Recently, there's been a lot of talk about bees and their declining population. In today's programme, we're going to talk to Maria Clooney about her experience with bees. Hello, Maria. First of all, why did you take up beekeeping?
Well, a few years ago, I read a novel in which the main character kept bees and really enjoyed it. Then I met the author, who told me how the story came about. But it wasn't until I watched a documentary on TV that I chose to become a beekeeper myself.
I imagine beekeeping is really time-consuming.
Well, I work as a journalist, so time is very precious. If I could, I'd give up my job during the summer and only work during the winter, when the bees don't need my attention. That's my dream. In reality, I make a weekly plan and I make sure I have at least 2 afternoons available to attend to my bees. My children think it's an old-fashioned hobby. However, they give me a hand on the rare occasion when I travel abroad for longer periods of time.
And it must be quite challenging too.
Absolutely. Last year I faced my greatest challenge yet, when the temperature dropped suddenly and my bees were under threat. Over time I've had the usual problems every beekeeper faces, such as your bees flying away from their beehive with the queen to form a new home, or when your bees get badly affected by dangerous pests, like wax moths.
I also heard about bees becoming aggressive. Can you tell us a bit about that?
There are many reasons for this behaviour. People say you should wear light-coloured clothing when dealing with bees because dark colours can upset them. I did have a problem recently when a neighbour was burning something in the garden. My bees reacted badly and became irritated. Apparently, this can also happen when they can't find enough flowers to feed on.
I also heard that sometimes the queen bee has to be replaced.
That's right. Once, when I had to get a new one, I got a tip from a friend who also keeps bees. She suggested ordering one online. I was quite astonished that people can do that, and to my surprise, received the special delivery in the post within 3 days of ordering. In some cases, though, the existing queen bee can naturally create a new queen when the group gets too big.
You're very interested in the behaviour of bees, aren't you?
Yes. Last year, I was invited to a lab to observe something called the waggle dance. I'd always thought that this dance was a response to a possible danger, such as an earthquake. But in fact, it's what happens when a bee has found a good source of food, and it returns to indicate the distance and the direction of it to the rest of the bees. That's what I find incredible.
Indeed. We've mentioned the challenges of beekeeping, but what about the rewards?
Well, just ensuring your bees don't pick up any diseases is quite an achievement. I've been asked to do some presentations about bees and how important they are for us. I really enjoy doing this. But that was nothing compared to the feeling I got when people started buying my honey at the local market.
And how about bees in the future?
Well, many people worry about bees, but I remain positive. I've noticed that more young people are taking up beekeeping as a hobby, especially in cities. And thanks to lots of parks in our towns, there's been an increase in the amount of food for bees to survive on. This, especially, is really encouraging for me personally. I've also noticed a rise in the number of college courses that offer beekeeping. So let's do our best to make sure that bees are here to stay.
That's a very good message to end on. Thank you, Maria.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Recently, there's been a lot of talk about bees and their declining population. In today's programme, we're going to talk to Maria Clooney about her experience with bees. Hello, Maria. First of all, why did you take up beekeeping?
Well, a few years ago, I read a novel in which the main character kept bees and really enjoyed it. Then I met the author, who told me how the story came about. But it wasn't until I watched a documentary on TV that I chose to become a beekeeper myself.
I imagine beekeeping is really time-consuming.
Well, I work as a journalist, so time is very precious. If I could, I'd give up my job during the summer and only work during the winter, when the bees don't need my attention. That's my dream. In reality, I make a weekly plan and I make sure I have at least 2 afternoons available to attend to my bees. My children think it's an old-fashioned hobby. However, they give me a hand on the rare occasion when I travel abroad for longer periods of time.
And it must be quite challenging too.
Absolutely. Last year I faced my greatest challenge yet, when the temperature dropped suddenly and my bees were under threat. Over time I've had the usual problems every beekeeper faces, such as your bees flying away from their beehive with the queen to form a new home, or when your bees get badly affected by dangerous pests, like wax moths.
I also heard about bees becoming aggressive. Can you tell us a bit about that?
There are many reasons for this behaviour. People say you should wear light-coloured clothing when dealing with bees because dark colours can upset them. I did have a problem recently when a neighbour was burning something in the garden. My bees reacted badly and became irritated. Apparently, this can also happen when they can't find enough flowers to feed on.
I also heard that sometimes the queen bee has to be replaced.
That's right. Once, when I had to get a new one, I got a tip from a friend who also keeps bees. She suggested ordering one online. I was quite astonished that people can do that, and to my surprise, received the special delivery in the post within 3 days of ordering. In some cases, though, the existing queen bee can naturally create a new queen when the group gets too big.
You're very interested in the behaviour of bees, aren't you?
Yes. Last year, I was invited to a lab to observe something called the waggle dance. I'd always thought that this dance was a response to a possible danger, such as an earthquake. But in fact, it's what happens when a bee has found a good source of food and it returns to indicate the distance and the direction of it to the rest of the bees. That's what I find incredible.
Indeed. We've mentioned the challenges of beekeeping, but what about the rewards?
Well, just ensuring your bees don't pick up any diseases is quite an achievement. I've been asked to do some presentations about bees and how important they are for us. I really enjoy doing this. But that was nothing compared to the feeling I got when people started buying my honey at the local market.
And how about bees in the future?
Well, many people worry about bees, but I remain positive. I've noticed that more young people are taking up beekeeping as a hobby, especially in cities. And thanks to lots of parks in our towns, there's been an increase in the amount of food for bees to survive on. This, especially, is really encouraging for me personally. I've also noticed a rise in the number of college courses that offer beekeeping. So let's do our best to make sure that bees are here to stay.
That's a very good message to end on. Thank you, Maria.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Part A. You will hear a teacher giving a talk about a photographer called Alex Stransky. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
In this week's talks, we've been focusing on new talents in all forms of art. For my talk today, I've chosen a young photographer, Alex Stransky, who was born in Slovakia in 1981. Alex's style is easily recognisable, and I love the way he captures the mood of each place he visits. He claims that he only takes photographs of natural places and stays away from man-made structures like bridges or castles. The one exception to the rule is lighthouses. He says he's fascinated by their history. Alex has always been a keen photographer, and as a child he would spend his summer holidays taking pictures of animals, trees, and anything that caught his eye. His father noticed his talent and encouraged him to pursue his hobby and study photography at university. After graduating, Alex got a job as a portrait photographer at a local studio. A few years later, he set up his own small company focusing on weddings. However, he knew this was only a start, and he wanted to concentrate on landscapes. In his spare time, he still visited his beloved mountains. He would vary when he went there, either going at sunrise or sunset. At dawn, he would photograph the peaks surrounded by the morning mist. The sky was his favourite thing to take pictures of, towards the end of the day when the sun was setting. He had to be quick to capture these images. If he waited a few minutes, the scene could be very different. Alex's first big break came when his photos were published in a magazine called The Travel Digest. Then other offers followed, and Alex put together his first public exhibition. It was a great success. But the finest moment for him came when, after entering a contest held each year, he won the Outstanding Image Award in the landscape category. Now he's got his eye on the World Photography Awards next year, where he'd love for his work on landscapes to be recognised. Alex has always enjoyed travelling as much as taking photos. His favourite spots are in Scotland and Norway. He loves uninhabited locations with exceptional natural beauty, and believes the best way to express his experiences from these travels is in pictures rather than words. Being alone with only his camera as his best friend is something he finds both relaxing and inspiring. Before we look at some of Alex's photos, are there any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
In this week's talks, we've been focusing on new talents in all forms of art. For my talk today, I've chosen a young photographer, Alex Stransky, who was born in Slovakia in 1981. Alex's style is easily recognisable, and I love the way he captures the mood of each place he visits. He claims that he only takes photographs of natural places and stays away from man-made structures like bridges or castles. The one exception to the rule is lighthouses. He says he's fascinated by their history. Alex has always been a keen photographer, and as a child he would spend his summer holidays taking pictures of animals, trees, and anything that caught his eye. His father noticed his talent and encouraged him to pursue his hobby and study photography at university. After graduating, Alex got a job as a portrait photographer at a local studio. A few years later, he set up his own small company focusing on weddings. However, he knew this was only a start, and he wanted to concentrate on landscapes. In his spare time, he still visited his beloved mountains. He would vary when he went there, either going at sunrise or sunset. At dawn, he would photograph the peaks surrounded by the morning mist. The sky was his favourite thing to take pictures of. Towards the end of the day when the sun was setting, he had to be quick to capture these images. If he waited a few minutes, the scene could be very different. Alex's first big break came when his photos were published in a magazine called The Travel Digest. Then other offers followed, and Alex put together his first public exhibition. It was a great success. But the finest moment for him came when, after entering a contest held each year, he won the Outstanding Image Award in the landscape category. Now he's got his eye on the World Photography Awards next year, where he'd love for his work on landscapes to be recognised. Alex has always enjoyed travelling as much as taking photos. His favourite spots are in Scotland and Norway. He loves uninhabited locations with exceptional natural beauty and believes the best way to express his experiences from these travels is in pictures rather than words. Being alone with only his camera as his best friend is something he finds both relaxing and inspiring. Before we look at some of Alex's photos, are there any questions?
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear question 8, part B. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about Alex Stransky's photographs and the educational trips that he organises, and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Carmen. How are things?
Hi, Tomek. I was just thinking about you. I went to the talk last Thursday and really enjoyed it. I know that you also love photography, so I wanted to tell you about it.
Yes, I heard it was great. Some of my other friends went and they can't stop talking about it. Speaking of which, did you know that Stransky's exhibition is in town soon? Before coming to our town hall, the exhibition is first on display at the National Gallery, and then it moves on to Ontario's Exhibition Centre.
I had no idea. Are you going?
Definitely. I'm really into landscape photography. Fancy coming?
That would be great. I've also found out on his webpage that he organises trips where he teaches you how to take pictures in the wild.
Funny you should say that. A friend of mine actually went on one of those trips with Stransky.
No way! Where to?
They went to the Swiss Alps. He has nothing but praise for it, and that got me thinking that I'd love to do it too. I can't decide between a trip to Corsica or the Dolomites in Italy. Another popular option, which unfortunately for me is completely sold out, is New Zealand. Or there's Norway. But trips there don't start until next year, and I don't want to wait that long.
So where do you stay on these trips?
Well, on arrival, most people stay overnight in a hotel, but some choose a bed and breakfast because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Then, once you start hiking, you spend each night in a cabin. A few brave people sleep just under the sky in a sleeping bag, but that doesn't happen very often.
And what are these trips like?
Well, it's a mixture of photography classes and adventure in the wild. Stransky visits all the destinations himself before he takes his students there, so he knows exactly which spots are good for photographing and what time of day to go. If you visit his website, you get a breakdown of things you need to bring. Apart from the obvious, like a good camera, you must take at least one spare memory card. Having a USB stick helps, but Stransky normally has his laptop to upload the pictures of each day, and he keeps the photos on his laptop till the end of the trip. You look at them together, and he gives you feedback and praise. In the evening, you socialise with the others.
That sounds brilliant. I wouldn't mind going on one of these trips too.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hi, Carmen. How are things?
Hi, Tomek. I was just thinking about you. I went to the talk last Thursday and really enjoyed it. I know that you also love photography, so I wanted to tell you about it.
Yes, I heard it was great. Some of my other friends went and they can't stop talking about it. Speaking of which, did you know that Stransky's exhibition is in town soon? Before coming to our town hall, the exhibition is first on display at the National Gallery, and then it moves on to Ontario's Exhibition Centre.
I had no idea. Are you going?
Definitely. I'm really into landscape photography. Fancy coming?
That would be great. I've also found out on his webpage that he organises trips where he teaches you how to take pictures in the wild.
Funny you should say that. A friend of mine actually went on one of those trips with Stransky.
No way! Where to?
They went to the Swiss Alps. He has nothing but praise for it, and that got me thinking that I'd love to do it too. I can't decide between a trip to Corsica or the Dolomites in Italy. Another popular option, which unfortunately for me is completely sold out, is New Zealand. Or there's Norway. But trips there don't start until next year, and I don't want to wait that long.
So where do you stay on these trips?
Well, on arrival, most people stay overnight in a hotel, but some choose a bed and breakfast because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Then, once you start hiking, you spend each night in a cabin. A few brave people sleep just under the sky in a sleeping bag, but that doesn't happen very often.
And what are these trips like?
Well, it's a mixture of photography classes and adventure in the wild. Stransky visits all the destinations himself before he takes his students there, so he knows exactly which spots are good for photographing and what time of day to go. If you visit his website, you get a breakdown of things you need to bring. Apart from the obvious, like a good camera, you must take at least one spare memory card. Having a USB stick helps, but Stransky normally has his laptop to upload the pictures of each day, and he keeps the photos on his laptop till the end of the trip. You look at them together, and he gives you feedback and praise. In the evening, you socialise with the others.
That sounds brilliant. I wouldn't mind going on one of these trips too.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.